Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Tuesday was the 100th day of Donald Trump's return to the Oval Office. To say it's been eventful would be an understatement. Deportations, tariffs, standoffs with world leaders, and the shrinking federal workforce are just some of the highlights. This week, the Drudge Report posted Donald Trump has the lowest 100-day score in 80 years. But when you break down the country state by state, his approval rating is truly all over the map. Joining us now to talk about his approval rating and the first 100 days and all things national politics is Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast. Welcome back, Ken.
Thanks, Amy. Good morning.
With 100 days into his second presidential term, Donald Trump himself is very pleased with how things are going.
We've accomplished more in 3 months than most administrations accomplished in 4 years or even 8 years. And we're just getting started. Believe me, we're just getting started.
So I'm not sure if you listened to his full speech about his first 100 days, but yes, as I said, he's very pleased with himself. How do you think these first 100 days have been going?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, if you're looking at polls, then you'll see that it's not going so well because he's having record disapproval numbers for a newly elected president. His numbers are in the low to mid 40s, even low 40s, and no president in recent memory who was recently elected had numbers so poor. But as he said, he has a lot to be proud of because he has promised a lot of what he's delivered, and that is a presidency of retribution and revenge and vengeance. And a lot of what he's doing about attacking, illegal or maybe even legal immigration and universities and anti-Semitism and all the things that he's campaigned against, he has followed through on. And he has a very pliant Congress, the Republican Congress, who has not spoken a word against him. They've approved some of his really unbelievably unqualified cabinet officials. Everyone got through. The only one who didn't was Matt Gaetz, and he pulled himself out of consideration for attorney general. But when you think of Pete Hegseth I just go down the list of people who's in the cabinet. It's amazing. But, you know, when you have a presidential, when you have a Senate run by your own party and you have the strength, the political strength that Donald Trump has shown of, you know, putting fear into the minds of many Republicans, he just gets what he wants. There was an amazing quote, a meeting this week of his cabinet, and they all just sat around. It was almost like Chairman Mao. They were saying how great, what a great job he's done. And, you know, and America should be thankful for him. It was almost really, you know, cult of personality stuff that you haven't seen, you know, since Mao Zedong in, you know, decades past. But he's getting what he wants, and nobody seems to be stopping him. Although the court seemed to be more and more vocal, standing up to him and disagreeing with his tactics and policies. But even with the Supreme Court, when, you know, demanding the return of the person, you know, incorrectly, wrongfully sent to El Salvador, he said, I have no intention of bringing him back. And that's a complete violation of a unanimous Supreme Court.
Now, Newsweek created a map. It was a 100 days map showing Trump's approval rating in each state. A state like Wyoming was at 71%, Idaho was at 64%, and then traditionally blue states, as you would expect, were lower, 26% in Maryland and Vermont. Ohio sits perfectly in the middle, 50% approval rating, according to this map. You mentioned that this was, by some polls, the lowest approval rating in 80 years, but it truly depends on who's doing the poll, right? I mean, how do we know what people are really thinking?
Well, I mean, I kind of think that, you know, when you take like the Marist poll or the Washington Post, ABC News poll or things like that, they have a very good reputation and they're not seen as biased, although, you know, Donald Trump has a way of, you know, saying that any poll he disagrees with is biased. As a matter of fact, he's suing the Des Moines Register because of the poll in the 2024 election. It predicted that Iowa would go for Kamala Harris. And he's suing them for millions of dollars, which is unheard of, suing a poll that just, you know, predicts that he's going to lose the state. But anyway, so, but I think people feel that you're absolutely right, though. This is not a United States of America. All 50 states, as you point out, Wyoming, Idaho, these are states that are have gone strongly for Trump and will continue despite, you know, controversies over his policies. So, I mean, if you want to go state by state, you'll see that there's a very strong opinion, strong positive opinion for Donald Trump. And you could also make the case that one of the things that doomed Joe Biden, which was the seemingly open border with Mexico and the thousands and thousands of migrants who would pour into the country every day, he's cut that back into basically a record low. So a lot of the, you know, a lot of things he's doing are unpopular, but things like, you know, securing the border, that remained very popular with the American people.
Now, you know, the people who he is popular with, from their perspective, he's doing exactly what he said, as you said earlier. He is cracking down on immigration. He is putting America first in front of our relationships with foreign leaders. But what do you think it would take for something like a Wyoming or an Idaho to have the approval rating dip lower than it is? Is it going to be if these tariffs don't work and states like that start to see things happen to their economy? It has to be. Do you think it has to be the personal economy before the polls will change there?
It does. I don't think this is more about, this is less about ideology and more about how it affects your pocketbook and how it affects your personal life. And I think Americans have proven that they could turn on a dime from approval to disapproval of a president if the economy goes sour. And right now, with the you know, the tariffs are still in place, even though there are some exceptions, you know, the price of eggs that he promised on day one would come down. Of course, it keeps going up. Gasoline prices keep going up. Supermarket prices keep going up. So ultimately, when you check your pocketbook and realize that you're spending far more than you did, you know, you're better off than you were 4 years ago. And if it's much worse, and your dollar is not, you know, carrying as much as it used to, maybe people could start to think twice. But again, you know, there's no indication that the solidly Republican Congress, the Republicans in Congress who control the House and Senate, show no indication of a souring on Trump. There is some grumbling about the tariffs. And again, if many people are, you know, they find themselves in like Election Day 2026 hurting, you say, well, maybe the Democrats have a chance. But one of the only things in the polls that show popularity worse than Donald Trump is the Democratic Party. I mean, right now, one of the most popular, most widely quoted poll is, I think, the Washington Post. It says, basically, whom do you trust to run the affairs of the country? And 37% Donald Trump and 30% say the Democratic Party. So until the Democratic Party can get its act together, until it could come up with a leader that that people seem to be drawn to, Donald Trump will, you know, seem to be getting by just fine. And if Chuck Schumer is the Democratic leader in the Senate, and Ken Martin, who nobody still knows, the new Democratic National Chairman who comes from Minnesota, if nobody ever heard of them and nobody seems to be respecting them, then Donald Trump could keep calling for, you know, the impeachment of judges or ignoring judges all he wants, and he could talk about, you know, kicking Palestinians out of Gaza. I mean, but it's interesting. Maybe if the polls in the United States are not so positive of Donald Trump, we saw what happened in Canada and in Germany before that, the voters in those countries seem to indicate that they don't want, that they're not fans of what Donald Trump is providing. And the fact that the liberals in Canada held on to the parliament majority, or at least the control of the government, seems stunning given what the polls showed a couple of months ago. But that's how other people see Donald Trump, if not Americans.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking with Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast. I was listening to the BBC NewsHour the other day, and they were saying that this whole 100 days thing started with Kennedy back in the 60s, and now it's caught on. It was funny because they were just saying that, like, every leader in every country is doing it now. What do you make of this whole first 100 days agenda being like this new? It's not even new. It's the buzz phrase everyone has picked up on.
Well, I wouldn't say it started with Kennedy. I would say it started with FDR.
That's what they said. So I don't know. You can quibble with the BBC.
Yeah, they're foreigners. What do they know? But the fact is, it did start with FDR and what he accomplished. And it's very fair to say that Donald Trump has done more, you know, for better or for worse, to affect the policies of this country and affect the policies of every American, of any president since FDR back in 1933. So it's just remarkable that, it's very funny. The polls are not praising Trump. They're really showing that he has almost record low numbers. But the fact that everybody's talking about it and the fact that he probably accomplished more in the first 100 days than anybody could have imagined, certainly much more than he did when he was president, you know, back after 2017, that suits Donald Trump just fine, whether or not people like it or not, whether the fact that it could jeopardize Republican control in 2026, that's another story, but that won't be answered for another year and a half.
Now, earlier you mentioned Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth. He's been caught up in another scandal regarding sharing sensitive military information on an unsecure messaging app. So now Don Bacon, a Republican member of Congress, is suggesting that Hegseth should step down. Do you think that other Republicans will call for Hegseth to be removed?
No, Don Bacon is an odd duck in the fact that he's stood up to Donald Trump in the past. I don't remember if he was, you know, he's a, I don't remember if he was, if he voted for impeachment or not, but the fact is he's one of the few Republicans in office who's been willing to criticize. You know, you think of all the anti-Trump Republicans, the Adam Kinzigers, the Liz Cheneys, you know, people like that. Well, they're all out of office. I mean, they either got defeated or they retired. But the fact is, they don't have to worry about getting reelected because the voters, like certainly in the case of Liz Cheney, booted her out of office. So Don Bacon is a one of a kind. But, you know, for every Don Bacon, you have a congressman from Tennessee who's pushing through a constitutional amendment saying that Donald Trump should run for a third term in 2028. Which, of course, as far as I know, is against the Constitution, the 22nd Amendment of the Constitution. But there were Republicans who were calling for that as well. Bacon may be, I just remember, you know, with Richard Nixon, I remember early in his term, there was somebody who called for his impeachment and everybody rolled their eyes and said, "You got to be kidding." And then, of course, within a couple of years of his second term, he was out of office. So maybe it'll lead to something, but right now the Republicans don't look like they're in any rush, any hurry to bring down their president.
Now, if I'm remembering correctly, in Trump's first term, his cabinet changed an awful lot, even within the first year, where people were in, people were out. What do you think the cabinet member, like, and also the cabinet members that he picked in his first term, were people who could rein him in on a few things? What do you make of his cabinet this time around, even beside Pete Hegseth? Do you think that they'll all stick around?
See, that's a very good point. In the beginning, he did not pick yes men or yes women. He picked a lot of establishment Republicans. Trump didn't know the first thing about running the country when he was elected in 2016. And he pointed a lot of establishment figures to the cabinet and had a lot of establishment figures as his advisors. This time, they're all sycophants. They're all Trump sycophants that will never say no. And again, all you have to do is go on YouTube and look at some of the cabinet meetings where they go around the table singing their praises of Donald Trump. It's just remarkable. It almost seems like a Saturday Night Live satire. But the fact is that they're all in his corner. And the fact that after all this stuff, after the two scandals regarding Pete Hegseth and an open server where he's talking about military secrets, and Donald Trump says he has complete faith in him, I mean, I don't know what it was. You know, this is the same Republican Party that talked about Hillary Clinton's emails. You know, what about her emails? But I mean, what Donald, what Pete Hegseth apparently has done is far dangerous, far worse, and really more jeopardizing of American military secrets. And yet, if Donald Trump stays with him 100%, as he said last week, then I don't know what it'll take for any member of the cabinet to go. I mean, if anything, maybe you'll see a Marco Rubio. Yeah, I always, my theory always was that Trump never cared for Marco Rubio. They fought during the 2016 campaign. He picks Rubio. He leaves the Senate to become Secretary of State. And my God, the things that Rubio is saying is nothing like what he said in the past. And if Rubio is seen as the least bit disloyal, I think Donald Trump wouldn't hesitate for a second to get rid of him. But right now, Pete Hegseth, incredibly so, seems safe in his job.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. I don't know if it was last week or earlier this week where Pete Hegseth was touting killing a program that involved women in the military, and he called it a woke program, and he said we got rid of it. But it was a program that President Trump had put in 2016 in his first term.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, they have a script and they follow the script, but some things, you know, some things that Donald Trump has said good things about on Tuesday, you know, he's ready to get rid of on Wednesday, and there's no accounting for you know, history, like days, you know, one day old history. If Trump changes his mind, the whole cabinet does it as well. The things that Marco Rubio are saying, you know, compared to what he said as a senator regarding Ukraine or anything, you know, anything like that, is just remarkable how different it is. But you lose your independence, you lose your own ability to think for yourself when you give up your regular job and become part of the Trump administration.
And now coming up, we're going to stick with Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast. We're going to talk about some of those 142 executive orders that Trump has signed in his first 100 days. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you were going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Donald Trump's first 100 days in office have been marked by shifts in domestic policy and international relations. He has signed 142 executive orders, which is unprecedented. Trump has framed his use of presidential power to push through his policy agenda as a necessary step toward fixing a broken America. And when it comes to tariffs, he says America has been abused by other countries, and he has to fix that as well. We're talking national politics this hour with Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast. So, Ken, what do you make of the bulk of these 142 executive orders? I mean, that is a big number. That's a lot of orders. And basically, he's taking executive power because he's saying Congress isn't doing anything.
Well, you know, the two things that stand out when he was running for president in 2016, he said, Barack Obama is always playing golf, and I will never play golf. I'll be too busy in the White House to be playing golf. Meanwhile, Donald Trump spends all his time playing golf. And also he says, I will not be, you know, running government through executive orders. I mean, I've never seen a president like Barack Obama who's used so many executive orders to change policy. Well, as you point out, Donald Trump has made history by signing more executive orders than anything. And it's very funny for him to blame Congress, because Congress is run by the Republicans. It's run by, John Thune in the Senate and Mike Johnson in the House. So how do you blame your own party for the failure of Congress to act? It's just very easy for him. You know, Congress is, I don't know what it's done other than, I don't know what it's done actually, because basically all he's doing is signing executive orders. He's upending a lot of what Joe Biden and previous Democratic administrations have accomplished, mostly Biden, and he's done it with the stroke of a pen, and he can do that. I mean, it's just, you know, it's very funny. Joe Biden was very hesitant about upending Trump policies because, you know, Joe Biden was the kind of guy who believed in conciliation and working with other parties, with the opposites, you know, the other party. And Donald Trump has no compunction at all to just say, hey, look, I'm just changing everything. And he just signs it and is very proud of it. And I mean, I've never seen somebody use executive power more effectively. I mean, you think of FDR or Lyndon Johnson. Donald Trump basically knows what he wants to do, and he's getting things accomplished that, you know, only his most fervent supporters dreamed would be possible.
Do you think this pace and the use of executive orders will continue for 3.5 more years? Or do you think he's done all the big ones and now we'll just wait and see if Congress does anything?
No, I don't think there's any ending of what he wants to do. There's always another law that he wants to change. There's always another policy that he wants to get rid of. With the things that he wants to do, certainly in foreign policy, when it comes to Gaza, when it comes to Greenland, when it comes to Canada, when it comes to, you know, Mexico, all these other things, there are a lot of things that are just remain incompleted. And the best way to do it is through executive order. And he signs something that says no more protection for Anthony Fauci. I mean, just, and then he signs that. So he can do it because he does it because he can. And until there's an effective judicial response to him or an effective congressional response, I mean, Congress is passing laws that he's just completely ignoring. And Congress says, okay, you know, it's okay with me. I've never seen a bigger abdication of congressional authority that this Congress is saying right now with Donald Trump. In not only my memory, in reading history, no Congress has ceded more authority than this current Congress.
Now, let's talk about federal courts for a minute. A lot of these executive orders and the actions resulting from them are now ending up before federal judges. A lot of these things are becoming court cases, some of which are being ruled on quickly and some of which will be in the courts and be appealed, and it'll go on for a long time. Do you have other administrations with their executive orders, you know, clogged up the courts like this?
No, I've never seen anything like that. And in the rare moment when some judges do stand up and say, no, you're violating the Constitution, Donald Trump says they need to be impeached. And for John Roberts, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, to say that you just can't impeach judges whose policies and verdicts you disagree with, and for him to stand up is pretty gutsy for him, because the Supreme Court itself has been very, very timid when it comes to standing up to Donald Trump. They don't want to cause fight. They don't want to cause dissension between the judicial and executive branches. So for Roberts to stand up and say this is going too far, but ultimately that hasn't chastened Donald Trump, it hasn't kept him from doing what he wants to do, and he will continue to violate until the Supreme Court says, okay, you gotta, you know, I'm putting my foot down. But when you have people like Clarence Thomas and Justice Alito, and sometimes Gorsuch, and sometimes, you know, the other conservative members, it's going to be very hard to stop what he wants to accomplish.
I mean, what can judges do if they're challenged by the executive branch, if he defies orders? I talked to an expert about Supreme Courts, and they said that they can hold maybe they can hold the administration in contempt, but probably not hold the president in contempt, right?
Well, I think they could. I think they certainly could hold the president in contempt, but whether, again, there are people around him who say, okay, maybe we have to stop here. But right now, when you think of the Stephen Millers of the world and the Cash Patels of the world and everybody else, nobody seems to be willing to stop what they want to do. I mean, actually, J.D. Vance, the vice president, said not that long ago that I can't believe that these judges think they could stop our policies. Like, that's exactly what the judicial branch is there for, to put a check and balance on the executive. But when you have people like J.D. Vance saying they have no right to do that, the judiciary, has no right to do that, then we're running into, you know, waters that we've never, ever dipped our toes in, let alone dipped our whole body in before this. I'm so tired of saying unprecedented and remarkable, but that's what we got here.
I believe J.D. Vance should have some sort of degree that he got somewhere along the line where he learned about the Constitution as well. So, right.
Well, I think that it's the Constitution of Donald Trump, and you know, you join the administration, you follow that kind of law.
What do you think of the recent arrest of Hannah Dugan, the Milwaukee judge who was accused of obstructing immigration officers?
I mean, that's scary stuff. That's really scary when, you know, it's not only the going after migrants, you know, people who may be here illegally, and sometimes you're deporting them without due process. But then when you start arresting judges and put them in handcuffs, people say it's a police state. And I've seen so many, you know, comparisons to Germany and things like that. But when you sit back and think of some of the things that the administration is doing when it comes to the law and the Constitution and, you know, arresting judges, I mean, why not? When you're deporting people without due process, when they just, the things he just does. And until the courts say you can't, well, the courts are saying you can't do it and he still does it. I don't know what stops him. Obviously, one would think that the ballot box could stop him, and we'll see what happens in 2026. My prediction still is that the Democrats take the House in 26, which could lead to impeachment. Not that that matters, because he's never going to be removed from office. But the Republicans will keep the Senate, and if that's the case, Trump will still have free reign to do what he wants without being fear of the judiciary stopping him.
Yeah, and I mean, I just heard on the news this morning that they want to use other departments to help with the immigration efforts, including the United States Postal Service. And I don't think I had, my mail carrier person helping with immigration on my bingo card for 2025.
Isn't it just something? It's just, and the fact that so many people who believe in government, who believe in what government is trying to accomplish, they're just thrown out of work. They just, people who've spent decades working for the government because they believe in what government has to offer, they just lost their job, and they're not even being replaced with loyalists. They're just, you know, throwing them out. So now, you know, you think of one of the Trump's first executive actions was to pardon everybody, you know, part of the rioting of January 6th. But if you want to throw an egg at a Tesla, that's becoming a hate crime. I mean, they want to prosecute people damaging Tesla cars as a hate crime. But what they did at the Capitol on January 6th is enough to be pardoned. It goes beyond comprehension.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast. Let's turn to international relations for a little bit. Many leaders, especially in Europe, have shown that they want to step away from some American companies, cybersecurity manufacturing firms. Will this affect America eventually? I mean, we're going to see that eventually. It's not just the tariffs, but it's also certain countries just saying we're not going to deal with America.
Well, this is exactly what's happening. I mean, America was the gold standard when it comes to how to behave in the world. And the fact that so many countries, most of our and many of our allies, are just turning away from the United States. They don't trust their leadership. They don't trust their economic policies. The tariffs are being done for retribution. I mean, for him, the president to say that I'm putting these tariffs on Canada because of all the fentanyl coming in the country. Nobody thinks fentanyl is coming in the country from Canada, except for maybe 1 or 2%. But they're just doing it because he wants it to be the 51st state. He's attacking Greenland, and he says he's attacking Denmark. He says they're not doing a good job in dealing in governing Greenland. I mean, he just has a naked desire for land and resources. I mean, the deal he's working out now with Ukraine all has to do with Ukraine's natural resources. Not that he wants to protect Ukraine from Russia. He still says that Ukraine started the war. He really said that. And the embarrassment he put Zelensky through at that White House meeting was shameful. But this is what he just wants to do. And other countries are taking notice, and they say, this is crazy. And is it driving other countries into China's hands? It seems like that's what Trump seems to be fearing the most, is that the rise of China. But it seems like everything we're doing is pushing other countries into following Beijing's lead. And you know, what's going to happen is that the U.S. economy is going to be hurt because a lot of longtime trading allies are going to give up on that relationship.
I mean, international relations are heating up around the globe. They're India and Pakistan, China and Taiwan, Ukraine and Russia, of course.
But what's the argument? I mean, if the United States says they're going to, you know, they could take Greenland by force, they can take Canada by force. What's the moral argument of stopping China from taking over Taiwan? I mean, you know, it leads me to think that Trump has a Taipei personality. But I won't use jokes like that because it's a very serious program.
It's a very serious program. The whole idea of the America First policy, that's interesting because you're saying, you know, he wants to take over Greenland and take over Canada and have his way with Ukraine, but still have an America First policy. Yeah. Can you have both?
Which is just, it's just stunning. And you know, I have a few friends, you know, in Europe, and I've been writing to them and talking to them a lot in the last couple of months, and they just are astonished what's happening, and they just can't believe that what he's doing is just pushing them further and further away. And they still say that, you know, we love America, but we don't love your president. But I don't know how do you keep loving America if the policies of America are ones that punish our allies? And I don't know how long this goes on before it's too late to win them over and win them back.
Coming up, we're going to continue our discussion with Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast, more about national politics. We'll dive a little deeper into Canadian politics after the break. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking about national politics this hour with Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast. And Ken, I don't know how closely you follow Canadian politics, but Trump received some credit for the victory of Liberal Prime Minister Mark Carney over his Conservative opponent.
President Trump is trying to break us so that America can own us. That will never, ever happen.
What do you make of saying that the Liberal Mark Carney won in Canada because of America's president?
Oh, I don't think there's any question. And you asked me how closely am I following it. I mean, I think I followed the Canadian parliamentary elections closer than I do for congressional elections in this country, at least in the past month. It's just remarkable. For years, the Liberals were on the ropes. Their polling numbers were terrible. The economy was basically in the toilet, and it forced out the resignation of Prime Minister Trudeau. And what's remarkable is that I mean, there's no way in the world that the Liberals could have kept control of the government except for Donald Trump's ill-advised, ill-thought-of decision to, one, talk about annexing Canada and the tariffs that basically pushed Canada towards a recession. And Mark Carney is basically saying, look, Donald Trump is out to destroy this country. They want to take over the country, I'm not going to let that happen. And I don't remember such dramatic a change in a foreign country's election campaign in within a month, between a sure victory by the Conservatives and the shocking comeback of Mark Carney. And I blame it, or credit all of it, to Donald Trump. And I mean, to me, there's no question that had he not stuck his, finger into the politics of our neighbor to the north, I think the Conservatives were on their way to a huge victory.
I mean, even in a country that we're seemingly leaving alone, Australia's seen elections with a similar bump in left-leaning parties. Is that a knee-jerk reaction, or do you think it's a wider trend to come?
Well, I mean, first of all, there are countries, like Hungary and Turkey, where quasi-authoritarian leaders still stick by Trump, and they like his way of style of government, and they kind of emulate him in many ways with regarding on suppressing of rights of the media and the judiciary and things like that. But when Trump decides to, I mean, people are proud. Canadians are proud people, and when you hear an American president saying, when he called Trudeau, or I think he called Carney the same thing, he called him governor because they're basically mocking him as being the governor of the 51st state. I think people look at that and say that's insulting and regrettable, and you think it's funny, but we're going to vote Americans out. By retaining the liberal control of the government. So, I mean, it basically Trump led with his chin, and I don't know how he didn't see it coming. He did the same thing too with Germany when J.D. Vance was traveled to Europe a few months ago and said that German voters should not criticize right-wing parties, and they should give more attention to these right-wing neo-Nazi is probably not too, strong of a criticism of these parties. And that's remarkable given Germany's history of, I don't follow history that closely, but I remember Germany having some problems in the 1930s with their leaders.
Maybe a little bit,
And the fact that J.D. Vance will stand them and say, why doesn't Germany have more respect for right-wing parties, far-right parties? It's just remarkable. So, whoever's advising the president and the administration on how to deal with far with our allies and the politics of our allies, barely misjudge what's going on.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking with Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast. I wanted to go back to something we talked about briefly at the very beginning, which is where are the Democrats? What are they doing? I think you were on, I don't remember if it was a month ago or 2 months ago, and the fact that I don't remember is telling, is Cory Booker was going to save the Democratic Party. He talked for 25 hours, and therefore he was going to fix everything. What happened?
Well, I
Where is
mean,
where is he?
look, when the Democrats control nothing, nothing is going to change because of a Cory Booker speech. But the fact is that what Cory Booker did and other Democrats are doing, and that includes Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who are drawing huge crowds around the country. You have people like Chris Murphy, the senator from Connecticut, who's really, refusing to let Trump go get by with all of his bluster and policies. Kamala Harris, you know, there's a lot of talk about Kamala Harris. Maybe is she going to run for governor of California next year when Gavin Newsom is term limited? Well, by judging from her speech the other day, it doesn't sound like she's running for governor. It sounds like she may be thinking about the presidency once again. Al Gore gave a very, very fiery speech. I mean, the thought of using Al Gore and the word fiery in the same sentence is really pretty remarkable. But it was really strong stuff. And so maybe, just maybe, the Democrats realized. And that reminded me of what happened when Dick Durbin, this number two Democrat in the Senate, announced this week that he's going to retire. He's 80 years old. He's kind of he's a nice guy, a bit of a milk toast. But the thought of Chuck Schumer and Dick Durbin, Durbin is 80, Schumer is 74, 75. The fact that they're the leaders of the Democratic Party in the Senate, when you have such an angry and impatient Democratic electorate out there, I think there is changes. You know, there is going to be some changes with the Democratic Party, starting with Cory Booker. So I'm not diminishing what Booker tried to do. He's not going to change the world overnight. But the fact that more and more Democrats are saying, you know, the famous line from Network that I've had it up to here and I'm not going to take it anymore. That seems like what the Democrats are leaning towards as we approach the 2026 midterms.
Jerry Connolly from the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, he decided to step down too. He's not going to seek re-election. So it's happening in both the Senate and the House. Certain Democrats are just deciding to bow out.
Well, think of the 2024 election. I mean, the leader of the president of the Democratic Party in the presidency was Joe Biden, who is past his 80th birthday. Nancy Pelosi was the longest time the leading Democrat in the House, and she was in her 80s. I mean, finally, they're saying, look, this is even despite what the fact that Bernie Sanders is still running around the country. The fact is, you need energetic. I mean, it's not even an age thing. It's an energy thing. And Biden didn't seem to have the energy at all that Bernie Sanders has. And whether Bernie Sanders would make a good president or not is one thing, but there's clearly an impatience with the fair. First of all, the Democrats are shocked that Trump was elected in 2024, reelected in 2024. And if that's the case, they're not going to be quiet about it. And is it too late? Maybe, because given what Trump has been doing for the past 100 days and will probably do more for the next 1,200 days, it's not going to stop anytime soon. But for the Democrats to finally stand up and say, look, we're going to fight you every way, and we're going to fight you in the courts, we're going to fight you at the ballot box, maybe there's some pulse to the Democratic Party yet.
And I'm seeing a lot of Pete Buttigieg is trying to make himself out there. He's talking a lot, and I think he even moved to make some sort of political move eventually.
Well, he moved to, that's a good question. I mean, he moved to Michigan, but the fact is Michigan now has an open governor's race next year. Gretchen Whitmer is term limited. They have an open Senate seat. Gary Peters is not running for re-election, but Buttigieg said he's not going to do anything, either seek any office. So even though he did move from Indiana to Michigan, I think his eyes are still on the White House in 2028, as are many many Democrats around the country: Andy Beshear, Roy Cooper of North Carolina, Gavin Newsom. I mean, there are more. J.D. Pritzker, J.B. Pritzker, the governor of Illinois, who is one of the richest people in the world, was in New Hampshire, coincidentally, the other day, talking about Trump and Trumpism. So there seems to be more energy coming from the Democratic Party than we've seen in quite some time.
Back to Trump's approval rating, I was wondering your thoughts of he has a 50% approval rating by most polls here in Ohio, and he has endorsed Vivek Ramaswamy, a gubernatorial candidate here. We have another gubernatorial candidate, Dave Yost. We have Amy Acton running on the Democratic side. What do you make of the Ohio's race for governor? Will Trump's approval rating impact Vivek Ramaswamy? Will he still see the Trump endorsement helping him?
Well, we saw what it did to, J.D. Vance in the 2022 Senate race. We saw what it did to Romero in the Moreno in the 2024 Senate race. Trump still has tremendous power with an endorsement in the Republican primaries. So, you know, it's one thing for everybody to say Trump is terrible, and you think that the midterms are usually often a referendum on what the president is doing. But, you know, you don't have to be that old to remember that Ohio used to be a very swing state. I mean, it used to be considered a toss-up state. It's not anymore. So I think whether it's Ramaswamy, whether it's Dave Yost, whether it's any other Republican, I still think that they hold the governorship only because that's what Ohio has become, which is pretty remarkable. I mean, I always talk about the days. I mean, this is not 100 years ago, but the days of John Glenn and Howard Metzenbaum, you know, that's basically what Ohio used to be. And Republicans were getting clobbered when they ran against him. Boy, that times have changed, a tremendous amount of change since then.
So I know that the midterm elections are still a ways off, but they seem to be creeping closer each and every day. Do you think that all Republicans running in the midterm election are going to stay in Trump's good graces? Are they going to try to, like, all the Republicans will need his endorsement in all of these races?
Well, there's a difference between needing the endorsement and refusing to criticize him. If Republicans are going to do what J.D. Vance actually was doing in 2018 when he was first talking about running for the Senate, and he was comparing Trump to Hitler and things like that and saying that, you know, Trump is a cancer for the Republican Party, well, that Republican is not going to succeed, because all you have to do is say a bad word about Donald Trump and the Trump folks will get out there and defeat you in the primary. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to be on board with all of Trump's policies and the tariffs and all that stuff, but it'll be very interesting to see.
But you have to make it through the primary, and then
you have to make it right. Exactly. I mean, Richard Nixon always talked about how you have to run to the right in the primary and then move to the middle in the general election. Well, you can't cross Donald Trump if you're running in the primary. But we'll see what happens. We'll see. You know, you could be like a Governor DeWine, who's clearly not a Trump loyalist or a Trump favorite. But he's not criticizing Trump, but he's basically not a Vivek Ramaswamy. And we'll see what direction the Republican Party does. But right now, I look at the numbers for the Senate. I still see the Republicans holding on to it, which is pretty remarkable if the president's numbers still, you know, continue to fall.
Did you see the video when Governor DeWine and basically everyone from Ohio joined the Ohio State Buckeyes at the White House for the for the celebration of the football team winning the national championship?
I did not.
Oh, you did not? Okay. Well, anyway, J.D. Vance dropped the trophy, but, you know, that's neither here nor there.
Oh, that I saw.
That you saw. Okay. Well, yeah. So everyone who wants to be governor or currently is governor or ever thought about being governor for Ohio was at that event. And he name checked all of them. He said hi to Vivek Ramaswamy. He said hi to Dave Yost. You know, there was a lot of it was interesting who wrote that speech, because they got every name in there.
Well, I'd also like to see what happens to the new senator from Ohio, the one who's, you know, named to replace Vance, you know.
John Husted, yes.
Yeah, Husted, who, you know, the lieutenant governor in DeWine. He also is one of the old-time, not moderate, but a normal moderate conservative Republican, what the Republican Party used to stand for, not a extremist. And I wonder if the Husteds of the world may have a bigger, like John Thune, the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, is not a bomb thrower. He's an establishment guy who's kind of like down the middle when it comes to conservative philosophy. So we'll kind of see which path the Republican Party takes, again, as we approach next year's elections.
Well, we're running out of time, but I did want to get your take on one thing. Yesterday, I interviewed John B. King Jr., the former U.S. Secretary of Education, about his new book. But then I asked him about the current state of the Department of Education, you know, that he used to run. And he said he is very hopeful that Congress will act and not allow the department to be completely dismantled. Where is Congress on all of these departments?
Well, basically, whatever Trump seems to want. I mean, one would think that given how important USAID has been to save democracies and save countries around the world from, you know, from diseases and things like that, and there's been nary, you know, been very little criticism. I don't know. I don't know what's happening. I don't know what it will take to grow a spine. But again, as you point out, if the economy, if the tariffs are hurting your pocketbook, I think more and more people will speak up, and then maybe Congress will follow. That's the only thing I can think of changing from what we have now.
But it's interesting because a lot of the things that he's cutting are Congress appropriations. I mean, that's what all of these lawsuits are about that are going through the federal court. So Congress can decide not to fund in the future, but they've already funded in the present.
Well, but there's a lot of things that they funded, and that Trump just says it just disregards it completely. And that's part of the unbelievable presidency we've seen, where he'll take congressional actions and just completely ignore them and just do what he wants. And again, you're gonna, Congress will either take it and continue to take it, or they'll say, okay, you know, it's time to take our stand. I mean, Richard Nixon won 49 states in 1972, but by within a year and a half, Congress was just saying, you know, this guy got to go. So things do change. I don't know if that those days are comparable to what we're having now, but we'll see, you know, we'll see if there are changes in people's minds, and especially the Republican Party's mind.
The only thing that's constant is change. We'll end with that. Great.
More true than ever.
That was Ken Rudin, host of the Political Junkie podcast. Thanks for being with us, Ken.
Thank you, Amy.
And this has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.